You are listening to Sid Weighs In, where Tuck School business professor, associate dean for executive education, and an expert on strategy and leadership, Sidney Finkelstein, shares his views on what leaders are doing, why they are doing it, and whether it makes sense for them and for you.
This is Sidney Finkelstein, and you have tuned in to Sid Weighs In, the podcast where I talk about a recent BBC column that I've written with a guest host who kind of shares some of her own interests on the topic. And today, our guest host is Morgan McLean. Hi, Morgan.
Hi, Sid. How are you?
I'm great.
So I'll introduce myself. I'm a first-year Tuck student. I was in Sid's class in the fall, and I'm really excited to be here today.
When we were talking about, you know, being a guest host, I asked you to think about which podcast, which column you might find interesting. And this is the first one you picked. So what is it about?
Well, I think the question you're raising about how do you think about capabilities leaders need in advance and how do you assess that is really interesting. All of the first years at Tuck right now are thinking about summer jobs, and recruiting for that is really interesting to see how different companies try to assess candidates. I think it's very different. They all have very different purposes doing so. So that's why this one struck me interesting.
Have you seen some best and worst practice, leaving names, company names aside?
Sure. I think the companies that do it really well try to see people in different settings. So try to assess not only job-related aspects, technical aspects, but personality aspects as well.
And some are just more cut and dry. Just there's an interview and boom.
Sure. It seems more like a template that came from somewhere that's not really tailored to an individual person.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? When it comes to managing people, hiring, firing, managing people, when you follow these templates, you end up oversimplifying. And so you might be okay for the average person, but nobody's the average person. Everyone's a little bit different, right?
Exactly. So Sid, love to hear what your thoughts on this topic, capabilities leaders must have.
Well, here we go. I, like many people, have been thinking a lot about U.S. President Barack Obama lately. Did we pick the right man? Do we ever pick the right man or woman? And how can we know ahead of time whether we've got the right person to be our leader? I mean, that's a question you could ask if you think about it for any leader in any job, right? And what's more critical? Did we get the right person? Well, the puzzle is one that is faced not just in presidential politics, but by all companies, profit and nonprofit alike, as well as volunteer organizations, NGOs, hospitals, schools, and governments. The person at the top can make all the difference in the world, for better or for worse. Politicians and other leaders from virtually every corner of the globe inevitably disappoint. But the much bigger concern is the mindset of voters, board members, and nominating committees when selecting our leaders, and the uncomfortable realization that we're actually not very good at it. I'm not even talking about the myriad of mistakes we make in selecting talent when we hire, from preferring people who look and act like us to believing that we can size someone up from an interview. Actually, it's just what you were saying, right, Morgan? One interview, you think you can, you know what other people are like. And by the way, this is in the column, but I'm going to ad-lib a little bit. The data on this last point about interviewing shows that we are astoundingly bad at it. And most of us think we're actually pretty good. And interviewing is still the dominant technique in company after company. But the data say that it's really not very good at predicting whether somebody's going to actually do well in on the job. It's really amazing. So the single biggest problem, the fatal flaw in choosing presidents, school board leaders, or football coaches for that matter, is that we believe we can predict the future rather than looking for a leader who can quickly adapt to whatever the unpredictable future holds. Think about what stands as best practice for choosing leaders. You assess the challenges and opportunities your organization or your team faces, and then you look for that one person who has the best array of skills to address those challenges and those opportunities. And that's considered state of the art. But what if we're not that good at figuring out the most critical challenges and opportunities we want our leaders to solve? And even more, what if the issues of the day are eclipsed by new events? With the pace of change as intense as it is across industries and countries, how can we even believe we are able to identify the precise bundle of experiences, capabilities, and personality needed to take on what tomorrow brings? Yet we act as if that is exactly what we're able to do. In long election cycles, like in the United States, by the time a new president is sworn in, the entire mandate may have changed. Was President Obama elected because of his massive experience in addressing global financial breakdown? Of course not, but that's what dominated the first year of his administration in 2008, coinciding with the global financial crisis. How about U.S. President George W. Bush? He had been in office for less than 8 months when September 11th happened. Did voters anticipate that kind of challenge to the country when voting for him? Certainly not. In fact, how could we? Even the most seasoned executive is vulnerable to the same fatal flaw. Reginald Jones was ready to retire as CEO of General Electric in 1981 when he decided to turn the reins over to Jack Welch. One of the things he said at the time was that after a period of technological change, the economy, and hence GE, was about to enter an era of stability and maturity. He didn't have a sense of the coming onslaught from the Microsofts, Intel, Ciscos of the world, yet he was the CEO of one of the most powerful and resource-rich companies on the globe. He had access to the best advisors and experts that money could buy, and he got it wrong, utterly wrong. If we can't predict the future, then how can we figure out who's got the right stuff to lead us into that future? First, there's a body of knowledge and experience that's relevant for any top job. It's like an entry ticket to the game. You can't be considered if you haven't at least paid some dues. Second, you need to demonstrate a track record of accomplishment. Playing is not enough. You have to have some wins under your belt, too. Many organizations stop there, but you really have to go to the third, final step to increase the odds of identifying a great leader. You need to ensure that your would-be leader has the agility to adapt to new and unexpected circumstances. In the face of change, executives who stick to the same playbook that got them to the top is almost always a failing formula. The inability of senior executives to adapt and adjust is the real reason companies like Blockbuster and Kodak went out of business, and the reason why companies like Google and Amazon keep beating competitors to the punch time and time again. The need for agile leadership is a problem for executives, really in all organizations. And the more senior the position, the more complex, the more ambiguous, the more important the challenges and the decisions a leader is faced with. It's precisely for these types of challenges that there's a huge premium on adaptability. When faced with a failed strategy, we want our leaders to come up with something very different. We want them to adapt, to demonstrate flexibility, and to show that they have the agility to be a great leader. And we want them to do it in real time, all the time. Which brings us back to President Obama. The big question is, has he shown himself to be an agile leader amid multiple crises such as Syria, Iran, Superstorm Sandy, battles with Congress? The agility question is the one that voters should have asked before 2008, and I hope we'll be asking it again when we get to 2014 and 16. Great leaders must be adaptable. Consider the military special forces, those highly trained personnel assigned to the most dangerous and unconventional missions. These elite units, which date back actually to Roman times, select and train warriors for strength, maturity, motivation, and intelligence. Candidates who make it through the end are incredibly capable, yet there is one characteristic that is make or break in the final analysis, the ability to adapt and adjust and think fresh in real time. And that is the one capability all leaders must have.
So what struck me about this column was the question of agility. I thought it was really interesting because it's something that is so important, but I don't know how you assess it in advance. Have you seen examples of companies or other organizations that have been able to assess this in advance?
Right. That's a great question. And you know, anytime you try to measure some of the softer stuff about leaders, it's not so easy. So actually, a number of consulting firms have developed practices around that, especially the headhunters, Heidrick & Struggles, Spencer & Stewart, Korn Ferry. They have developed surveys and metrics to try to assess agility. I've done that in some of my own research. I'm in the process of writing a new book about how to identify and develop the world's greatest talent. And so obviously agility is related to that. And there are ways you can actually teach it and develop or help people develop by becoming more agile. Measuring it is always a little bit tricky, but I think there's a bunch of things you could look at. And to me, you could look at somebody's track record as well. Have they had to, you know, the big word is pivot in the world of entrepreneurship. Well, you need to pivot if you're a GE and IBM also sometimes. Have they been able to pivot from one kind of pathway that was going well and the world changed and they had to do something about that? And the higher up you go, the longer the track record to see that. And it's a little tougher in an interview. As I said, interviews are always a little tougher. But I wonder whether, you know, a really savvy interviewer could ask, you know, questions to people like you that are early in your careers to try to tap into the agility challenge.
Sure, Sid. I think this is really interesting in terms of interviews because there are probably a lot of different ways companies try to assess people. Consulting firms use an interviewing method called case interviews that actually gets you to think about information on the fly, and they like to look at your thought process, and that's actually very similar to what the job is really like, and the interviewer can also throw new information at you to see how you can assess it quickly and adapt.
So what's the agile part there, Morgan?
The agile part is thinking on your feet and mm-hmm. coming up with a course of action quickly.
Right, right. So they could switch gears on you, and they're going to check, you know, how are you thinking about this, and can you? I mean, it's not real work, but it's an interview. You're adapting, and you're being asked to adapt on the spot.
In life and in work, sometimes things change quickly, and if you let yourself get boxed in by what you're doing, maybe it's difficult to change directions. So they want to see how quickly can you actually pivot, like you were saying.
That's exactly what this whole idea is, and what agility really means. I wish that type of skill set was developed more in a lot of companies, because you look at all these companies and industries that have gone through this crazy disruption, you know, from taxis and cell phones and televisions and you name it. And companies and leaders find it really, really difficult to make those pivots, those shifts. And they're very smart. So it's not about intelligence, actually. It helps. It's not enough, I think. And what did you call these interviews again?
They're called case interviews. So it's a business problem that's sort of ambiguously structured. You have the opportunity to ask questions about what's going on and come up with a plan for solving the problem during the interview.
Yeah, they're well known in the world of business schools, especially for consulting type jobs. But I think they actually could have a lot of applicability in all kinds of jobs. I mean, you need to adjust the examples perhaps, and you want to be careful that you're not just testing for kind of raw intelligence, which gets you a lot of the way in kind of figuring things out quickly. Agility and intelligence, I think, are positively correlated, to be sure. But agility goes beyond intelligence. And the reason I say that is sometimes the smartest people think they figure it out. And so they're going to actually be less flexible. I've seen that in the pharmaceutical industry. I've seen that in high tech. I've seen it among professors, to be sure. Really smart people have got the answer worked out. And so they actually shut down their ability to be adaptable and open-minded and agile. And it's like shooting yourself in the foot.
Well, Sid, maybe agility is the new secret sauce.
You got it. Thanks, Morgan.
Thank you.
This has been Sid Wiesen. If you would like to comment on this podcast, follow Professor Finkelstein on Twitter @SidFinkelstein, #SidWiesen. Thank you for listening.